tell him, go and tell him. Go and tell him, go and tell him. Go and tell him, go and tell him.
They don't tell them we've been underwater since they threw us in the boat, selling cotton, picking blues, rock and roll, railroad building, serving white America before we was dope dealing. Brick laid the birth of the nation is the rock. White House, black man, plantation is the rock. But we still can't cross the street without the cops trying to send my man as well. The whole neighborhood rocks and take us to the auction block and let me change in the locks. Cause even Bill O'Reilly's daughter out here drinking some rock. That's what I call it. Well, Megyn Kelly trying to tell me Santa's white is in the camera. It's like I just remember when I start the new rock. I pull strings like the orchestra. Shut down the corners. Now turn to run up in the doors to get yours. But with 100 niggas ready and 100,000 more for you.
I see the future Martin Luther dreamt when he was a man. I feel the love of my mama fought for. See the stars on her hands. My father ain't no looking back now. As far as I ran, so turn these chains or give me death. Either way, we coming again.
Welcome to Africa 400. Thank you, Dashba, for tuning in again. Today is December 14th. I cannot believe 2022 is at the end already. And you are back for a fabulous show. We are continuing our series, No Love for Black Boys, which, of course, is highlighting the work of Dr. Jawanza Kanjufa, countering the conspiracy to destroy black boys, but also the very important film, Black Boys film, which Vic Mensa, who you just heard, go tell him that we coming. He has an appearance in the film, the documentary, very powerful documentary. We suggest that you all look at it. Today's special show, we're going to be going down. We all grew up with Louisiana hot sauce in our cabinets. I know you did too, right, Brother Richard? Okay, we got Louisiana hot sauce by way of Silverback Society with us today. Greg Rattler is representing them. So, y'all, we got some Louisiana hot sauce in the house, and so we're going to have a good time. And he's going to give us just breaking down the work they do. Very important. These are men going into the schools, helping our black boys. This is all part of what we call breaking the school-to-prison pipeline. So we're going to have a fabulous show. As usual, folks in the diaspora, I'm just going to do this a little bit of news headlines just to keep us up, keep us centered, keep us aware of what's going on. We want to continue to make sure our health is all intact, make sure that we're drinking our water. We're always talking about this. Brother Rich is a big proponent. Our vegetables, our food. Make sure you're not put no white bread in your body, no white sugar, no white flour, no white rice. Anything white in your body begins to break down your melanin, and this is not good. So make sure you also drinking your juices. We are people of the sun, so make sure you're eating your brown foods. Very, very important. Also, we know in the headlines, they're talking about Deion Sanders, of course, leaving the HBCU, Richard shaking your head, and going over to PWI. But folks, we know that this is a constant in the system of white supremacy. This goes all the way back to the plantation where they would pick, select certain slaves, black folks, to educate their children, breastfeed their children. So this is in harmony with the system of white supremacy. He is going to a PWI. We have quite a few folks, big name folks of African descent, who are teaching white children. And white people realize that their children have to get prepared for the world that is more brown. And so they are preparing them. So he is a part of those many, goes back hundreds of years, where they are teaching white children, preparing them for the world. And these children will be studying them, these youths, they will be studying them. So this is what that is. We are not surprised at it. And this is a part of maintaining that system, maintaining also power. So it's quite interesting to watch this play out. Also, we know finally Brittany Griner is finally home. I know she had quite an experience. They've been talking about how they want to continue to work to free wrongfully detained Americans. And, of course, we know in the U.S., which is called Incarceration Nation, about half of them are people of African descent. You can start right here. So, Ms. Griner, please, you and your partner, please, you can focus right here in America. I can give you a list. This is the work that we do with the prison movement. Quite a few wrongfully detained black men and women are in the prison. So you can start right here at home. So hopefully you'll be able to join the prison movement. Also, just want to just make mention again. We talked about last week about the group lawsuit of a group of white families. They are trying to adopt the Native American children. This goes back to, I think, 1978 Indian Welfare Act, where they said the children had to go to tribal families, which makes sense considering everything has been taken away from the Native Americans. But also we know they had the residential schools where millions were taken, removed from their family, put in these schools. But this group of white families today, this is a suit, y'all. This is very important that we track this, going to the Supreme Court to try to push against this to adopt Native American children. So we want to track this. You can show up at the, outside the Supreme Court. This is also a lesson for us, the people of African descent. It's important that we take care of our children and adopt our own. Our own have a specific lived experience, just like the Native Americans do. Like I said, during Thanksgiving, me and Brother Ty, who's not here with me, I'm going to try to hold it down today, though. We were at the Native American Museum there that day in solidarity with them. And folks, you know, some of us have people of Native American heritage in that lineage. We're going to have to pull away from Thanksgiving. We're going to have to stop celebrating it. And it, because to do that is to deny the Native Americans, and it leads to things like this that's happening in the Supreme Court. So we're going to have to pull back from some of this raggedy leftovers, hand-me-downs that come off the slave plantation, holidays, foods, et cetera, to really be on our own independent. Very important. Also, I want to mention, last week I was at this big grants meeting. About 70 folks in there, they were talking about grants. It was arranged by a senator. And, you know, these grants we're going to have to pull away from also. We can't be beggars looking for money. We got enough entertainers. They should be able to fund these grassroots groups, all these organizations that they are doing serious, important work in our inner cities. So we're going to have to find out their names, their addresses. We're going to write them letters. We're going to find them. And they're going to have to fund because we are supporting them. And if they can't support the people of African descent, our children, the work we're doing, then we cannot support them. We have enough money, enough millionaires now, where we don't have to have 100 groups competing for one grant. So just want to put that out there. They got to give back. They owe. We cannot let them forget from where they come from. Also, we got, and this is interesting, and in Arkansas, 8-year-old boy, this happened in August. He was sent by his parents to stay with some white friends. 80% of his body was burned. 8-year-old. It have a campaign, Justice for Jason. This is remarkable. No one called the police. The little boy called the parents. Parents came over. No one still called police. It was the parents, one of their fathers, that had to call the police. No one called police. 80% of his body's burned. Folks, we had a few years of Black Lives Matter. We should believe that people are who they are. The last few episodes, I'm talking about children being racially assaulted, attacked, and it's in these families that stay in these predominantly white areas, neighborhoods. Please, as we're talking about conspiracy to counter destroy our black boys, this is real. Also in Flint, Michigan, we had 2 young boys die in a fire. White policemen, white firefighters went in there, say they missed them. The 2 black firefighters went in there in Flint, Michigan and found them. But they had inhaled so much smoke, they died later, 8 and 12 years old. So we got to take what we are in this context very, very seriously. And also I want to give a shout out. We always highlight our supermarkets down Houston. Robert Thomas, he is celebrating his 1 year. He started a little supermarket. And also in Houston, they are opening Fresh House Grocery. We could give a shout out to Germany Peaches and Ivy Lawrence Walls, who just opened a grocery store. So we love when y'all open grocery stores. We always do shows on that. So, folks, just want to thank y'all across the diaspora doing real work. We creating our own narrative. Want to give major shout-outs. But also, folks, please continue to stay aware. We want to protect our babies. And now we're going to bring on our guests. But before that, we're going to take just a little break. Curtis is going to give us just a little bit of storytelling. One of the greatest storytellers, along with Stevie Wonder and Donny Hathaway. He's going to talk to us a little bit. This song, of course, is inspired by the Million Man March. This is after he had a severe accident. He was actually paralyzed. He recorded this song laying on his back. This is how brilliant melanated people are. This is why he's so mad at us. This man did this on his back. He recorded this song. This is the power of us. So we're going to hear just a little bit about that, and we're going to bring Mr. Radler on.
Thank you. no longer a child is born. Mother shed tears of joy as baby tests his lungs. But daddy's not there where he ought to be. Somewhere in Georgia, skinning and shooting craps on his knees. Another victim born out here in the hood. And based on statistics, it really ain't all good. Welfare takes the tab, and daddy can't sign, and it can't be seen. The family becomes a crime. The hunt is on, and brother, you're the prey. Serving time in jail, it just ain't the way. I'm living so hard, babe, that my hair's gray. We got to make a change. It's a brand new day.
Jerry Curtis Mayfield. We want to welcome our guest, Mr. Gregory Rattler Jr. Are you with us, Mr. Rattler?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. Good, I'm here.
Okay, welcome to Africa 400. We're just so honored to have you in the house today. We got Louisiana in the house featuring y'all, the Silverback Society. Very impressive work you're doing. We just want to expose you to our audience. We want to talk about the work that Silverback is doing, the model that it presents, how you're working to break the school-to-prison pipeline, and just the process, the success you're going through with our young men down in Louisiana. First off, Mr. Rattler, before COVID, I read that a black person, one in four black people, was arrested in the state of Louisiana. Louisiana still also has an Angola plantation slash prison down there. How do y'all in the backdrop of this, you are doing this amazing, phenomenal work. Talk to us about just your determination to do this despite your context surrounding our young black boys in Louisiana.
Oh, wow. So, Peeps, thanks for having us, first of all. Yeah. The context that you said about, you know, Louisiana and the incarceration status of this state, New Orleans is actually the most incarcerated city in the most incarcerated state in the most incarcerated country. Mm. So, you know, that's always a constant concern for the work that we do with our young boys. We try to make sure that they understand that they have the power, right, to shape what the rest of their life looks like. But that's all based on the decisions that they're making, right? So we try to make sure that they're conscious about the impact that a decision that they make today could have on their lives and the lives of the women and children who are going to rely on them in the future. So a lot of our conversation with our boys often is, you know, we let them know, you know, we're here to spend this time with you, but we're here for the women and children who are going to rely on you in the future. So the Silverback Society, it's a group of men who've done, you know, what we consider to be fairly well for ourselves in life. You know, we've made some mistakes, but we try to go into schools and give those life lessons to eighth grade boys such that they can learn the lessons without paying the costs that we've already paid as men. Right. It makes no sense for us to have fallen into the various traps and faced the various tribulations that we've faced in life. Learn lessons and hold on to that lesson such that we prevent our young brothers from having better lives and better paths to successful manhood. So, you know, we take brothers from all walks of life. We take brothers from all kinds of experience. But most importantly, we want brothers who are willing to make a commitment such that they can show up at a school building for 21, 22 consecutive weeks to make sure that some eighth grade boys have a great example of what positive, successful manhood, particularly black manhood, is supposed to look like.
Mm, I'm loving it. I told you Louisiana hot sauce is in the house. Brother Rich, he come off already. Let me ask, you know, as you're talking and we listen to your diaspora, you know, you are the recent executive director of Silverback Society. And y'all been around. Y'all been around some years. Can you just give us just a little background, just what was the motive behind starting it and just how you came to it, you know, how you came to be into it and just your place in it now.
Sure. So the Silverback Society was started in 1998 by our two co-founders, Lloyd Dennis and the late Pastor Arthur Wadsworth. Those two gentlemen were great fathers, great men in the community. So they had a relationship with the principal at a local elementary school. She called those gentlemen, asked them if they'd come in and kind of spend some time with the boys because they didn't have any male influence, any positive male influence in the school building. So they went, and in being good fathers, they understood the value of consistency in building relationships with young men. You know, them having sons, raising young men, both in their own homes and in the community, they applied their experiences as fathers and leaders to basically build this curriculum that they didn't even know that they were building. So after they, you know, had gone through a year or two of this, just really just working with the boys, they didn't even have a program defined. They kind of sat down and codified it, put it on paper, and actually confirmed that the Silverback Society was the way to do this work. I personally came to this work because my father was actually a mentor in the Silverback Society, and hearing him talk about the impact that he was having on other young men's lives while being the direct beneficiary of him having an impact on my life. Once I became of age and had enough experience to be able to share with some young men, it was like it was an organic match. It was natural for me to join the Silverback Society and become a mentor.
You didn't want to miss
the
out.
Staff. No, of course not. And it's, you know, like you and I had a conversation before this. You know, I mentioned, you know, my family history in community service. That it was just a natural calling for me from my mother, my father, my uncle, my grandfather, my auntie. You know, civil service, community service, being a servant to your people, has just been a part of how we were raised. So it was a natural thing for me to do.
So it's in your blood, in your genetics.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's in my genes, in my blood, in my DNA, whatever else you want to, you know.
So you consider. Can't help yourself.
Cannot. I don't think I would want to anyway. I enjoy it. I really do.
And also, y'all, just say, I know we got an HU graduate on phone too.
Oh yeah.
Howard DMV, which we are near. So you bring a lot of, also I noticed that you're carrying a background in dealing with one thing that's across our cities. And matter of fact, I was just in a conversation last night, it was a meeting about the violence that's going on.
Yes.
The black on black violence, our young boys, young people killing each other. Can you speak to that component and how that factors into the work y'all do with the boys through Silverback?
Right. So I used to work in the previous mayor's administration, and I worked with a program that was a crime reduction and violence interruption program. And in that capacity, I got to see a lot of young men who were involved in a lifestyle that really just was devoid of them being presented other options. Right. So they were kind of forced down a pathway that a lot of them, if they had other options, they would have absolutely taken those other avenues, right?
It's like, that's what Curtis was just talking about in his song. The crime, absolutely. The family, no father.
Exactly. And it all is cyclical, and it all works to further deteriorate the opportunities and the vision that these young men can see for themselves, right? So when we have conversations with the young boys in the Silverback Society, the first thing that we do with them, we ask them to identify themselves by name and favorite subject. And typically these are questions that our boys aren't really asked. They're not given the space to, one, identify themselves, and then for two, to self-select something that they feel that they're great in, right? So it gives them a chance to lift themselves up in a space, and then for grown men to be in a space where we're listening to eighth grade boys express themselves with a bit of confidence that they probably had never experienced before. It's something that we're really selfish about. You know, especially for it to happen in a school building, a space that's rarely male populated. And then for the boys to be able to see black men that they can identify and develop rapport and relationships with, we're really aggressive about doing that.
Let me ask you, Brother Greg, as you mentioned that the boys, the question you ask them, they have to identify themselves, which they rarely do. I think that's interesting. Can you unpack that? Because I believe, you know, Amos Wilson wrote in his book, Black on Black Violence, he said, the problem isn't the crime, the problem is with identity.
Right.
The reason for the violence. And can we unpack that? Because in our series, we've been having these different organizations on No Love for Black Boys. You have this sense of invisibility that our black boys are experiencing, of not worthy in society. I know you sit in many rooms. I can't even imagine the conversations. But can you speak to that, having them, just the power behind that, to identify themselves, and also why they're not able to? Go ahead.
Yeah, so having a young men to identify themselves is particularly important, because we try to, whenever possible, put the young men in a position where they have to think, right? So we always tell the young men that there's the difference between a response and a reaction is usually a thought, right? Mm-hmm. So if we can get the young men to just think about something, then we force their brain down a pathway where whatever the information is, it sticks. So if we just give them information, you know, we just tell them the answers, then it's kind of limited to that time and that space. It can fade away. But if we ask them a question and we make them think, we force them down a pathway where, one, they learn the muscle memory of thinking, and then we give them a space where they now own that answer. They now own that piece of information. And we use that model throughout our curriculum. It's always a function of asking questions so that we can engage in thought, engage in discussion, and we can help these young men to sharpen their edges.
And, you know, as you mentioned, I know we was talking, you were saying how at the age they are, you deal with eighth graders, you're talking about teens, how at this point, how their brain is expanding. Something you were saying about, I thought was interesting, you all aren't just helping, but you are looking at their brain, you're looking at the thought pattern. Can you talk about that? You were saying how it's comparison to a birth to the 5 year old, the 12 to 4. Yeah, speak to that. I think it's very powerful. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So at the age that these boys are at, around 13 years old, between 13, I mean like 12 and 14 to 15 years old, the brain experiences is the same amount of growth and development as it does from birth to five. So that's a particularly critical space in these young boys' lives, because they're beginning to shape their identities around manhood. They're starting to, you know, kind of test whether or not all of the information they got from their parents, their teachers, their communities, whether or not that's true. They want to find it out for themselves, right? And if we can help those young men to find healthy ways to question, to investigate, to interrogate, but also to be clear about why they're doing the interrogation, what's the purpose for them asking the questions, for finding the information, and then have a particular ownership of it, that's important to us. Because like we said earlier, a lot of our boys, they find themselves, a lot of our black males, period, they find themselves in spaces where it's tough for them to identify, it's tough for them to be able to express themselves. So they got to have a firm self control, a grasp of self-identity, self-control, self-discipline. That's mandatory. So we want our boys to get that in eighth grade, so that as they move into ninth grade, they see high school as a part of their training to manhood and not just a social hour. So they're committed to their academic success from day one, not, you know, when they wake up in their senior year and realize, oh, I'm graduating in 6-7 months.
You know, that's interesting. Brother Rich, I know you own the radio station, and also Brother Greg. Can y'all remember what y'all was doing at 12 to 14? Was that like a shift? What do you think, Brother Rich? Your teen years.
My teen years. Well, I think if we talk about teen, we're talking about middle school.
Yeah. And middle school is a critical period. That's an important time.
I was really into athletics at that time.
Okay.
I was hoping to be the next Michael Jordan.
You're trying to fly.
I was definitely playing sports and on every level. But I think the world transformed my mindset on life and stuff at that age too. Because my mom, I was telling you, my mom gave me that book in middle school.
Oh, that was in middle school. Yeah. Okay, interesting. He's saying, I'm right.
About the black presidents.
Okay.
And I introduced that into my social studies, a history class. And okay. My teacher, me and her had a back and forth dialogue.
This is in middle school you doing this?
Yeah, she didn't believe me. And my mom gave me the book. She gave me the book. So that's how I learned about there were other black presidents that were in the United States besides Barack Obama.
Okay, so I didn't know that. See, so what you're saying is right, Brother Greg, that's happened in middle school for him. So you all tapping into that critical space and time. So y'all limited. You got just that window right there.
Yeah. So we go into schools. We mentor boys during the school day.
Why in the schools? Why not your program outside school? A lot of folks have programs outside, but you going into schools. Why go in the schools?
So it does a couple things. One, it removes all of the barriers for the young men to participation. They don't have to worry about transportation. They don't have to worry about if a parent can afford it. They don't have to worry. All we have to worry about is whether or not the young man was able to come to school that day. That's the only barrier we have. And it allows us to be able to shift the paradigm and the young men's understanding around academic success. And we shift their understanding around their power as a cohort to shape the culture in the school building. So we'll ask them about, you know, how is the culture of the school building shaped? Mm-hmm. And often they'll say, you know, the principal says it, the dean says it, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. often let them, you know, we let them expense all of the answers that they have. And then mm-hmm. we'll say, okay, you eighth grade young men mm-hmm. are the shapers of the culture in this building. And they don't believe it at all. They have no belief, right? So mm-hmm. then you got to explain to them mm-hmm. the way you young men show up in this building mm-hmm. determines how your administrators and your teachers show up in the building. Mm-hmm. So if you decide that we're here for education, mm-hmm. for good citizenship, mm-hmm. to prepare ourselves for the next level, then your teachers got to show up prepared to help you on that to that end. Mm-hmm. But if you decide that all you're going to do is disrupt mm-hmm. class, you know, not be a good student, not be a good citizen, then your teachers and administrators have to show up prepared to respond to that.
That's interesting. So
you are the thermostat. You better than the thermostat.
Yeah, usually in the programs, the youth are outside the adults and outside the institution, but you all put a certain type of accountability. Well, you do. You are putting it. Certain type of accountability and responsibility on them at their age as far as their surrounds. Because you mentioned power a couple of times. They're
absolutely.
You approaching them like y'all not helpless. You can control. You got some control here, some power. That's powerful language. How do they respond to that?
Initially, they're a little hesitant, which you would expect
because they're not used to being talked to like that. Exactly,
right. And I have to be completely honest. We have some outstanding school partners who mm-hmm. do a great job of trying to uplift and empower our young boys, but they're just one space. Our young boys spend their time in so many different spaces that don't present the same energy that our school partners present. So we come in as a supplement to the school, as an additional partner to be able to say to the boys, look, we don't work for the school. We aren't teachers, but we're here to basically bring home some of the same messages that you may have heard from your teachers. But now you get to hear them from some Black men who are doctors, teachers, lawyers, business owners, educators, you know, military professionals, you know, all type of entrepreneurs, just so that boys can see that there's a spectrum of what healthy, successful, positive Black manhood looks like. And we bring, each one of our schools has a team of roughly 3 to 5, maybe 6 gentlemen. And that allows the group of boys, and we take all of the boys at the school. So if we execute a partnership with the school, we're going to mentor all of the eighth grade boys or none of the eighth grade boys. This is not a reward or a punishment. This is training on their road to manhood, right? So, you know, we work with all of the boys to make sure that they understand that, you know, the team that's before you, one of the men standing there will be somebody that you can identify with, connect with, and possibly use as a motivation for the rest of your life.
Okay, I gotta pull you in. Y'all sound kind of aggressive. y'all like straight. Y'all like in their face. Y'all coming at them. I sense it's a sense of urgent. What is the? It's a lot of energy y'all putting into them. It's a lot of. Why the sense of urgency? What is that? Where's that coming?
Yeah,
from?
I guess it's twofold, right? Like, we can't afford to lose any more of our young brothers, right? So there is an immediate urgency there. Right. But at the same time, you know, we want our boys to understand that as you move forward in life, you have power. Going back to the words you just used. Right. We don't try to build the the bubbly, everything feels good relationship with the boys. We kind of almost want to build and to breed dissatisfaction in them.
Why?
Right? We want them to go back into their communities mm-hmm. and say, I don't like how this looks. I'm going to change it. And if I can't, I'm going to ask my Silverback mentors. I'm going to ask my mentors from this program or the minimum at my school or in my church. How can I change this? But if we have them thinking that life is bubbly, life is great, then they kind of lose that edge to be aggressive about changing factors in society that can impact the lives of them, the women, the children, and the communities who are going to rely on them in the future.
So you all are intentionally wanting to create change makers, change agents.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And we want them to know that it can start right now in eighth grade. You don't have to wait until you're a senior in high school or junior in college or you're in your professional career. Right now, today, as an eighth grade young man, you can make a change that can change this school building.
Do you remember what you was doing in eighth grade? How were you eighth grade?
So in eighth grade, I was actually transitioning to a new school that I was going to be forced to be much more mature. And I fell in love with the marching band at that school. And it was clear that if you're a student, responsibilities in the classroom were not taken care of. I don't care how good you are on an instrument, you'll never see it. So taking care of your priorities was instilled in me from day one at St. Augustine High School.
And, you know, you talked earlier, and just so y'all know, folks, it's two more of him. You got two brothers, right?
Three. I got three brothers.
More? Oh, my goodness.
Three brothers.
All right now. All right now. I love it. You mentioned your father, because you just don't come like this, you are, how you talk. You mentioned your father already was a part of Silverback. What, for the fathers today, for the parents today, I'm thinking about your own father. What did he put into you all, his sons, to make you go out into the world and just, you all determined that I can change this, to have that empowerment at such a young age? What are the main ingredients that you would say as you reflect back?
So that's an unfair question, because we're going to need a whole another show if I'm going to just talk about my pops.
Well, Rich was like, no.
I'm going to need a whole another. Matter of fact, I might need a series.
You need
to
a
really,
series.
To really break down my pops' influence in my life. But first and foremost, I have the honor of carrying his name. So I've always been clear about the responsibility to make sure that the things that I do never reflect negatively on his name, because it's not my name, it's his. He's letting me use it for the time that I'm here, right? So I'm very appreciative of the fact that I've never in my life, from the moment that my consciousness began, had to look for a meal, clothes, shelter, love, support, encouragement, and discipline. I've never had to look for that. My father has always been a pillar in my life. So I think if I had to boil it down, I would just say consistent presence.
Okay.
You know, that would be the one thing that my father has never compromised when it comes to either of his sons and now his grandchildren.
You know, as you talk and you talk.
Even though he kind of pushed us to the side now because he got grandchildren.
He's
done with us. He got the grandbabies. Now we're done.
Yeah, he did his task. As you talk about consistent presence, when we think about our young black boys, our young men of African descent, there's spaces, you mentioned earlier, it doesn't look like that. Our young people of African descent, they coming from households and families, communities where so much trauma,
right? Correct.
So much trauma and drama.
Correct.
The fathers, our fathers have been taken out of our homes. They're missing. You can go blocks and blocks, don't see a black man.
Just absolutely, absolutely.
You know, the prison system has decimated our families, and so I'm wondering. I'm guessing with your men, they have been through their battles, their challenges, their journeys. How do you take, especially the young men of today, where it's so much chaos, it's so much alienation, they can live in the virtual world. Reality is like, how do y'all buffer all the emotional, the baggage, the trauma when you're interacting with them? How do you catch that? What's the safety net? You know what I'm saying? How do y'all how do they fall into you, I guess?
So we get our school partners by invitation. So we don't impose ourselves on the school. From that initially allows our relationship to be one of partnership and not one of a burden or an imposition on one on the other. So as it relates to the trauma that our young men experience and is often untreated, we use trauma informed approaches in our curriculum. A part of using the team strategy allows us to be able to continue working with young men. And if one or two young men in particular have a a question or a conversation they'd like to have, one of the team members can take the young man in the corner of the room and kind of have a more personal conversation with him, still in the space with everyone else so that the energy can stay there. But the young man gets the intention and specific time that he needs. If the conversation needs to be escalated, then the relationship that we have with our school partners allows us to do that. But we try to, as much as possible, be as sensitive to the trauma that our young men could face. We train our mentors to never refer to the young men as son, because we never know what the fatherhood dynamic could be. So we always relate to them as young brother or young man, or if you know his name directly, we will call him, all right, Greg, as opposed to son. We also take the approach that in dealing with trauma, a lot of our young men have relationships with Black males that are very transient. So that a gentleman may be a part of this young man's life for a particular amount of time, then whatever happens, the gentleman is gone. So now the young man is kind of without any mori, right? So that's why we go into schools and we're consistent about being there. And we walk with these young men all the way through the end of the school year. That way they're able to move off into high school. We connect them with existing high school silverbacks. So now their experience as an eighth grade boy can transition into their leadership skills and capacities that they exhibit as a high school student. And we're able to keep connections and keep hands on our young men and make sure that they know that once you're a silverback, you're always a silverback.
Let me ask you, Barbara, as you talk and you talk about the profound intentionality and the thought behind as you're dealing with our young men through silverback, what is the impact or the effect on the household? Because you're all working with the young men inside the schools, but you're doing some deep internal and as yet it's subtle work on them, on their spirit and their soul. What's the impact of what have you seen from parents, the household? Because they're taking that back into the home. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we assume that we're training the trainers. We tell these boys, we're spending this time with them, but our intention is for them to be, have the capacity to be able to provide for the women, children, and communities in their future. So that is the most important piece for us in terms of shaping the young boys as they move into their particular futures.
And as you talk in the school, does the school see, because you're partnering with the school, you're inside their space, do they see the change also?
Yeah. So, we tend to have conversations with the administration about the changes in the boys. We do a pre and post test, which allows us to see if, we kind of see what their ideas around manhood is before we do programming. And then at the end of programming, we get them to answer some of the same questions and we can mark the changes. But more, I guess, phenotypically, what I see is we work with eighth grade boys. And this week, we just completed our first week of programming with all of our schools. And it was our first time meeting some young men, and some of them already had the silverback wristbands or already had a silverback bag, and I'll ask, well, how'd you get that? Oh, well, my brother was a silverback 2 years ago, or, my brother was a silverback, 3 or 4 years ago. My brother was a silverback last year, and I took the bag from him. So it's clear that the knowledge, the ideas, the principles that we ask these young men to govern their lives by, when they go home into their communities, we tell them, we see you as leaders. You may not see yourselves as leaders, but those little cousins who get on your nerves and you try to push them away, but they want to do everything that you do. You're a leader to that young man. So teach him the right thing. So, we're seeing that these boys are starting to you know, they're starting to embody the capacities of leadership, mm-hmm. even in eighth grade, so that when they get to ninth, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, it's no surprise that they're mm-hmm. captains on the football team and, mm-hmm. you know, on the honor roll and drum majors and leaders mm-hmm. of student mm-hmm. government. It's no surprise. It's no surprise for us.
You know, Rich, what do you think as we listen to them? We've had several programs in schools. This is impressive. It's like, it's so intentional. It's so intentional.
It is, very much so.
And it's direct. It's clear. It's like you have a curriculum. what's your thoughts? You listen to it's a profound model. What do you think?
I think it's great. I think mm-hmm. it's great. Specifically because it's helped mm-hmm. shape and mold the minds of the youth.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the most important things when we all think about everything, how we manifest and how we build our energy up.
Mm-hmm.
It all dealing with the mental. Mm-hmm. If your mind mm-hmm. is right, everything mm-hmm. in your life is going to be right.
Mm-hmm.
Vice versa with the enemy. If the enemy, they say. Mm-hmm. Slavery is now mental. It's mental slavery.
Mm-hmm.
If the enemy controls our mind, he controls our actions.
Mm-hmm.
So if our minds are nurtured at a young age, mm-hmm. we are able to identify what the enemy is
mm-hmm.
on a mental level, and mm-hmm. it can help shape our physical realities mm-hmm. as adults.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Good,
so
brother,
so let me speak to something that the brother just said,
yeah.
please.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this mantra mm-hmm. That we use. We start all of our sessions and end all of our sessions with this mantra. We ask the boys to mm-hmm. really think about the words because it's what we're asking them to govern their lives by. So we start the pledge mm-hmm. like this. I will live my life as though generations depend on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I will teach and encourage all of mine mm-hmm. to do the same. Silverback, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. if you follow what that pledge says, it's saying that I will make sure that every decision that I make, I'm concerned about the impact that it will have on the generations that are coming behind me, because they are coming behind me. And I will teach and encourage everyone in my circle, everyone who's under the sound of my voice, everyone who's in the reach of my arms to do the exact same thing. And if these young men can shape their lives around that type of living in eighth grade,
mm-hmm.
then the lives that they will have when they get to seniors mm-hmm. in college and mm-hmm. living professional lives and developing families and creating careers, mm-hmm. they're going to be some outstanding brothers.
Ooh, I felt that right there. That brought tears in my eyes. That's powerful to have our boys to repeat that. What you think, Brother Rich? It's profound.
Because the repetition, mm-hmm. it becomes a part of their subconscious mind.
Mm.
It is.
That's right.
And that's really
mm. what shapes our reality too, is our subconscious mm. mind. We don't even realize how important our subconscious mm. mind is
mm-hmm.
and how to tap into our subconscious mind. It's
mm-hmm.
it's like when you're listening to a song on the radio, you hear a song
mm-hmm.
and they play the same song over and mm-hmm. over and over mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. You may hate the song.
Mm-hmm.
But because you've heard it so many times, it's, mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. start singing the song. You're like, why am I singing the song?
Mm-hmm.
It's now programmed into your subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what the repetition of what this brother's talking about is powerful mm-hmm. for the young men.
When you said that, that's why I was thinking, you know, it's like all the messages that go into our black boys' mind, they go into our mind as a people.
Yeah.
And so what they're actually doing, they are deprogramming. And I don't think enough of us are aware of that and know how to do it and know that we're supposed to deprogram.
Right.
What's your thoughts?
We're taking advantage of the fact that they're in a space where mm-hmm. their brain is supposed to be like tuned to learning anyway, right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
So if we're mm-hmm. giving them messages
mm-hmm.
that are self-empowering, mm-hmm. but at the same time empowering the brother next to you,
mm-hmm.
then they kind of believe, well, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right, so Brother Greg is the science guy, right? Because we mm-hmm. told him we asked him to identify themselves, their name, and their mm-hmm. favorite subject, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Brother Greg is the science guy. Brother mm-hmm. Mike is the social studies guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brother Brian is the English language arts guy. So guess mm-hmm. what that means? No one should be suffering in either of those three subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm the math guy, then none of my brothers should be struggling in math because they should all be coming to me,
mm-hmm.
right? But mm-hmm. I'm terrible in science, but my brother Mike,
mm-hmm.
science is what he does. So guess what? I'm not struggling because all I got to do is go to Brother Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Mike.
Mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. But if these boys start understanding that when they're in eighth grade, mm-hmm. then the chances of them seeing a mm-hmm. brother as a mm-hmm. op mm-hmm. or seeing a brother as someone mm-hmm. other than a brother, the chances mm-hmm. get dramatically reduced, mm-hmm. dramatically reduced.
Brother Rich just came in and brought us two little princesses. How old are you? What's say your name and age. We talking about the boy. We got the girls in here too. Who we need our boys to be men for. These girls gonna be women.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, say your name, baby.
My name is Mackenzie, and I'm 11 years old.
Beautiful, strong already. That's Brother Rich. Peace. And what's the little baby? Go ahead, say your name.
My name is Gabriella, and I'm 6 years old.
Oh, hey, Gabrielle, got that little fire in her already.
Yeah.
And you the big sister. Mm-hmm. And it's your dad. What you think of your dad? Good. Is he good? What you think of kids of your dad? The baby, Gabriella. What you think of your father?
Good. She's just going to do whatever she
said. Going to do whatever she said. So the oldest, we're talking about a young black. What's the shirt you got on? What does it say on your shirt? What does that mean to you? Mm. Why are you wearing? That's a powerful shirt to wear for us folks.
For justice for Black Lives Matter.
Mhm, mhm. Justice for you, mm-hmm. justice for us. What does justice look like to you?
Like have people having equal rights mm-hmm. to do something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you feel like you have justice?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You a powerful little sister.
I like that.
Already. These are his two little
Watch pieces. Out, world.
Right, yeah, watch out, world. With Brother Richard working on the girls and you got the boys, I think we got some hope coming, y'all, black folks. Yeah. What grade
so,
you know,
so it's funny you said that, sister.
Wait a minute, Brother Greg, I wanted to ask, what grade you going to? You going to seventh grade? Okay, what do you think about our black boys now? What do you think about young black boys that you deal with in school, the teens? You think they're okay? You think they need help? Think they need we need to work with them?
No. You think they're cool? Fine.
They're fine. I like that. She said they're fine? Okay. Her school is fine? Okay. I don't think they can get over on you. She said no. All right, little princesses. Thank y'all so much for joining. Your father just brought you in here. You like, yes. Y'all, thank you, Gabriella.
You're welcome.
All right, beautiful. All right, Brother Rich, beautiful, beautiful job. Brother Greg, what you think? We got the girls and the boys. I think we got the black family. We trying to pull it back together. Go ahead, Brother Greg.
I just wanted to shout out all of the programs that are working with the beautiful sisters around the city. Mm. There are a lot of programs in the city of New Orleans, the Beautiful Project, Project Butterfly, a lot of programs around the city that are working with our young sisters, just like mm-hmm. we got some programs in the city that are working with our young brothers. So this work is mm-hmm. it's a tremendous lift, but it's work that we must do because it's our future.
I agree. Well, folks, we're going to take a little break. We're going to go back. We're going to hear Curtis a little bit more, and we're going to come back to Brother Greg, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the impact as far as the men. He's going to talk a little bit about the men, how they select the men, the impact on the men. And we're going to hear about some things that they're doing and how we can continue to support. So we're going to bring Curtis back on, and we'll be back in a minute. A brand new day.
Watched a million plus the other day. Look, we all witnessed the sweat rolling down Miss Liberty's head. She knows the sleeping giant, she's no longer sleeping dead. Oh, what a fulfillment of prophecy. Let us teach the children freedom's never been free. It's okay to cry, go ahead and cry. Cause Jesus wept. And hope and faith we can. It's a new day.
World order, a brand new day. It's a change of mind for the human race. It's a new world order, a brand new day. It's a change of mind for the human race.
The die has been cast, and there's no need to fear.
cause people, the answer to your prayers are here. Sister Mary, don't you weep, tell mother not to moan, we need the love and daddy's coming home. There's no need to worry, the time's dictated plan. Mother Earth's given birth to a brand new man. Sister, I know you're misunderstood, but hold on to your man, cause the future looks good. There's someday
a new world order, a brand new day. It's a change of mind.
Curtis talking to us, one of our storytellers of the diaspora. If y'all just joined us, we are featuring highlighting the Silverback Society. New Orleans, or I think in Louisiana, they say New Orleans. Is that how they say it, Brother Greg? Is it New Orleans?
New Orleans.
Okay. And it's just an amazing program. This has been around 1998, I think Brother Greg said.
Correct.
Men going into the schools. They are going to where the children are. They ain't waiting for nobody to come to them. they ain't looking for them. They're going to where they are. They're meeting them where they are and just having a profound effect. And they consistent. This is really good. They consistent and they committed. And so we're just discussing that by way of the executive director, Gregory Rattler Jr., the son of Gregory Rattler Sr.
And I'm the remix.
And he is the remix via HU. We can't help because it's right up the street from us. And HU, and he then came back and brought it back home, which we love. So we want to. We've been talking about our boys, young men, but I'm really interested. I'm curious. What's the impact on you all, the men? You know, they say one of the best ways to grow and develop is to teach a child, is to have a child. What's the impact on your men and yourself?
They keep us young, plain and simple. You know, that's mm-hmm. really no other way. They keep us young and they keep you honest.
Mm.
Young people have a tremendous ability to see through BS.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because a lot of our young men have experienced a lot of trauma that has been unaddressed, they're naturally going to be a little distrusting or keep their little distance. So working with these young people forces you to be authentic, and it forces you to be clear about your ability to stay relevant in talking to them, right? Because the message stays consistent, but the context that you give that message often changes for them. So our ability to remain relevant, which is why we try to make sure that the name of the organization is the Silverbacks, but the vision of the organization, we don't want it to just be an older brother, with the seasoned hair, white hair, all the experience in life. We want boys to know that there's a spectrum of what manhood is, and like I said before, particularly healthy black manhood.
Mm-hmm. And what have you had any comments with some of the men, the impact it has on them?
Of course. So we traditionally, like I said, we do pre and post tests with the young men. Mm-hmm. And we evaluate the impact of the program on their thinking, on their lives, and on how they identify with manhood.
Mm-hmm.
But just in the last, program year or so, we began to evaluate the mentors for the same constructs. Right. So some of their responses have been, that using the Silverback model, using the Silverback constructs, has kind of shifted how they parent their own children.
Excellent.
For some of the men who are, do work with people, it's shaped how they, change and how they build relationships, maintain relationships, and just how they feel, their time is being used. So a lot of guys, they want to mentor.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of time and they're not really sure about how to get the best impact out of their time.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we're getting from men that they feel like we respect and appreciate their time, and their time is best spent in interfacing with these young boys on their journey to manhood.
So it's a dual journey. It's not just I'm helping you, but it's reciprocal.
They're helping us as well, absolutely. And we're honest with the boys, in them keeping us young, we learn from them, right? So we're very honest and transparent about the fact that we're not just here to teach and pass on information. We're here to learn from them as well.
And what have you learned, Mr. Gregory Rattler Jr., in this new position? I think you always learning. I sense that. I think you are a consummate student as well as a teacher.
That's been my learning, that this is a journey. because Every year is different. The young men are in eighth grade, but they're different eighth graders. I'm a year older each year. The mentors are a year older each year. We've had a year more of experience in life each year. So just being comfortable with being nimble and being willing to, you know, adjust to what's going on in life or what's going on in a young man's life that particular day. So that's been the greatest learning for me, to not be not to be static and to be rigid, but to be very dynamic and be willing to bend and flow with the changes in life.
And it sounds like it makes you all better men.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Better men, better husbands, better sons. Just it's a circle of life. That's what I'm sensing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm also an official. I officiate sports. And sometimes I've seen young men in eighth grade, and I may see them on a Friday night at a game on the field, and they'll run up to me. And the voice is deeper, the stature has changed. And, you know, it's like, you know, what's going on, Silverback? And you got to kind of like, who, you know, what's going on, Silverback? And you're like, you don't remember me from Moton Elementary? Like, you were not at Moton Elementary. I was a little boy. This is a grown man I'm talking to here. But to know that you made such an impact on a young man in one school year.
It's amazing.
That they remember you, even if they just remember the pledge or just remember, you know, some of the seven Silverback ways, then we did our job. And hopefully that young man's in a position to pass that knowledge on to some young man, somebody in his family, his community.
Amazing. Yeah. So, Brother Greg, as you explain and flesh that out, is amazing. Like you said, the reciprocal relationship, but the transformation is not just one sided. And I think maybe that's a mistake that a lot of groups make. People make, I'm gonna help you. I'm gonna assist you. I got to do this for you. And they take themselves out of the picture. When really people, Black people in America, absent, we all need help. we have been seriously impacted, affected in so many different psychological, emotional ways. And you speak to, I think with Silverback, they are manifesting is how, and this is, I think last week, our organization down TAP in Roanoke, Virginia, that healing is a holistic process. And I sense that healing is what is going on, not just for the young boys, but also for the men and by extension their families. And so healing, and I think that's something that we need to get, is a healing. It's a unified process. You can't do it alone.
Right. Yeah, so we don't try to fix the boys.
Right? Yeah.
We try to give the boys the tools, the techniques, so that they can change lives themselves, right? Because that's much more sustainable, and it puts them in a position to now be able to transfer knowledge on to someone else. You know, we don't want it to just be tied to whether or not they can have access to their Silverback mentors, which they always will. But as they move around in life, we want them to have the same agency, the same confidence to pass knowledge and to teach knowledge just like they come and learn it from us. So it's necessary that we put them in position to be able to change society, to change conditions in their lives and in their communities without us being present. It's mandatory.
Very powerful, very amazing work Silverback Society is doing. Intentional, it's subtle, but yet it's powerful. You internally, and I think our beloved Brother Malcolm and others have spoke about that, Iman Jamil, I mean, H. Rep Brown. He's out of Louisiana, I believe, when he was young. But he speaks about his one of his works, an internal revolution. Yes. You know, we often talk about revolution outside, but if you don't start with the internal revolution inside, there's no way you can even manifest a revolution. Oh, yeah. Don't even think about the external, the institution, you know. And so I think, not that I think, that I know this is what you all are doing. And the boys probably don't realize until they become men. It was like, okay, that's what that was.
So actually, there's a signature event that we have where we take all of the boys to a very nice restaurant in New Orleans. They have like a dining etiquette. You know, we give them a nice meal, and then usually at that event, they look at us and realize, wait a minute, this is a very nice event. We ain't paying for any of this. These gentlemen paid for this. They've been with us all of this time. Then it kind of clicks, and then they realize, wait a minute, all of the stuff that these gentlemen been doing for me, it's not for them. It's really for us as young men. So it's great to see that realization happen for those young boys. It really is.
Well, Gregory Ballard, I can't believe the time has gone already. It went so fast. Powerful, profound work. I can see why they selected you as the new executive director. What you think, Brother Rich? Is he the right one? Yeah. He's the right Brother Rich, the right one. Yeah, and your passion comes through. Your determination comes through. And I don't think
you have great. We have great mentors. Our men are outstanding.
Yeah, outstanding men. I don't think y'all gonna stop, and I think that's important, folks. This is Silverback Society. Mr. Rattler Jr., Gregory Rattler Jr., what can we do to support you? What is it? Y'all have anything coming up? Website? Give us all the information we need to continue to track the Silverback Society.
Absolutely. So our website is www.silverbacksociety.com. You know, if folks want to volunteer, if they want to make donations, they can do all of that from the website. Particularly the thing that we have coming up, one of our schools, they have their rite of passage event, and the young men are getting their blazers. So we want to make a donation to the school to help offset the cost for those blazers. But that lunch event at the end of the school year is pretty, it's pretty pricey, but it's the cost is negligible compared to the impact that we have on the lives of these little boys. So, those are the best places that we could use help, advocacy, any organization that have some space or some time and some talent to share with young boys. We love to make connection to them.
Lovely. So, folks, y'all heard it. Any way we can support? We mentioned earlier about a couple of folks around the nation doing some amazing work, open grocery stores, schools, Silverback. We have enough people, millionaires, that can give money. So please give your money. You don't have to be a millionaire. Donate monies to Silverback, to all these different ones. We owe each other. Africans are the only one that could fund our liberation. No white savior's coming for us. You ain't going to get it through grants and funding. Not the internal development that we've been talking about, the internal revolution. It will not be funded. It will not be funded. Only come through us. Come through us. Very important. Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for the time.
Gregory Rattler, Jr., Silverback Society. Folks, we're going to have Black Men United take us out. This is a group song. Someone said this to me. I never even heard this song. 40 plus African-American men. This is what I think during the 80s and 90s to the movie Jason's Lyric. Did this song, You Will Know. And I'm feeling like we need to have another one of these songs. I feel like maybe we need to have another Million Man March, something. We need to bring all these amazing men across the nation doing all these amazing things. We need to do this. So Black Men United is going to take us out. This is the message. Everybody stay on code, stay on point. And Melanin Rising, let's keep it going.
With my name.
And then I grew older and I saw what's to see, that the world is full of pain and my dreams they left me.
Then I got stronger and so tired of the pain.
That's when I picked up the pieces and I regained my name.
And I found hard yours to call by my blame.
And right now you look at me and it all seems in vain.
Your dreams ain't easy. You just stick by your plan. To go from boys to men. You must act like a man. When it gets hard, what you know. And my background sings.
And you will know.
I know you're crying, yeah, but it's all in dispay. And the things you want, you can't have, they just some fade away.
Life ain't over, yeah.
Just grab the wind and make amends, and I'll fight to take you far.
I think I need a second helping to that. Let's replay that. Okay. We gotta replay that.
A few months ago, more than 40 talented R&B artists got together with a very special mission.
They recorded an inspiring song for the Jason's Lyric soundtrack about young brothers coming of age.
You Will Know is a positive anthem that illustrates the power of unity. Proceeds from the sale of this top 10 hit will be given to the United Negro College Fund,
the Rwandan Relief Fund, and the Children's Defense Fund. Together, these men are responsible for selling over 100 million records worldwide. We are honored to have Black Men United on our show. Please welcome Boys to Men.
After Seven and the song's composer, D'Angelo.
Tevin Campbell and Portrait.
El DeBarge and DRS.
Aaron Hall and Damian Hall.
Gerald LaVert and Little Jaw the Rude Boys.
Brian McKnight and introing them.
Al B. Sure and Sovereign.
Keith Sweat and Usher.
Stokely of Mint Condition and Silk.
Dwayne Wiggins and Raphael Wiggins of Tony, Tony, Tony.
Christopher Williams and H-Town.
Ladies and gentlemen, Black Men United.
With my name.
And then I grew older and I saw what's to see, that the world is full of pain and my dreams ain't left me.
And then I got stronger and so tired of the pain.
That's when I picked up the pieces and I regained my name.
And I fought hard, y'all, to carve out my blame.
And right now you look at me and it all seems in vain.
Your dreams ain't easy. You just stick by your prick. So go from boys to men. You must act like a man. When it gets hard, grab what you know. And my background changed.
And you will know.
I know you're crying, but it's all in dismay. And the things you want, you can't have. They just some pain away.
Life ain't over. Yeah, yeah.
Just grab the wind and make amends. And a fight will take you far. Your dreams ain't easy.
You know.